And over here I put a little minus sign in the upper right hand corner. And down here I wrote the harm that I had done. And the reason there is this minus sign over here is because step 8 said made a list of everyone we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And this is this little willing mark in the upper right hand corner. And if it's a minus, if I'm not willing to make that amend, I have to tell the truth about that. And if I am willing, I turn it into a plus sign. But until I'm willing, I leave it a minus sign. And the reason that I do is because the prayer changes now. The prayer is, take me to my next amends and give me the power to make it. Because I need the power to do that. And the power has to come from a state of willingness at step 8. And the willingness is, of course, what we also ask for. I want to be gladly ready to make this amends. And they're not always easy to be gladly ready to make. It's sometimes a very tricky business. But the second tier of my mission is to be on as good terms with other people as far as possible. First tier, to have a good relationship with God. The second tier, and we all have this in common, the second tier of my mission in life is to be on good terms with my fellow man as far as possible. And then there's a third tier of the mission, that's my personal mission, that is really a description of what happens at the point where the talent I most love using meets the needs of the world around me. And perhaps we'll get into that a little bit later on. It's a fascinating thing to discover your own personal mission in life. And it takes a little thought and a little looking at your life. But we're now getting to a point, if we're talking 8 and 9 and 10, 11 and 12, where we must begin to have a purpose for our lives, one that we have chosen, one that has been given to, that's consistent with our very best relationship with God and the people around us, and consistent with service. If I write down the harm here, then I'm clear on the harm. Now I have a stack of 3x5 cards. And the reason that they told me to put them in this format was because as soon as I had made an amends, I could throw the card away. And so I have an ever-diminishing list of a pile of cards. And I would know exactly all the time where I am with my amends. And I kept that pile out on a desk with a rubber band around it or in a drawer. But I knew I had an eye on it. It would remind me, make the prayer, take me to my next amends and give me the power to make it. It was just there as a physical reminder that I had gotten that far, that God's grace had taken me a long way, and that I had some more work to do. So they also told me that there are five, they broke it down. They made it as simple as they could for me. They kind of developed a way of doing this that didn't leave much to chance. And I'm glad they did that. Because, yes, sir?
Yeah, on the ones that you're not willing to do those.
Right. Good question, thanks. Question was, what did you do with the ones that you're not willing to make? And the answer is, I'll take care of this right now. The answer is very simple. Once you've made two or three of these amends, and then you go back through the cards, you discover, I'll make that amend. I'm now willing to make that amend. I'm into it now. And you can see as you review the remaining cards, I am willing to make that amend. Okay, I will make that amend. And the reason that you need to know whether you're willing or not is because if we try to make an amend where we're not willing to do it, where we haven't forgiven that other person their part of it, where we're still holding a grudge, where we expect to hear back from them, well, I guess it was more my fault than yours. You don't hear that as often as you want to hear it, you know? It's like they don't think that way. And if we're waiting for that, we kind of have a tendency to be a little bit off track in the amends, and it's such a touchy area anyway that we got to be squeaky clean going into it, and we don't want to be carrying the extra burden of not being willing. So they told me don't make amends especially at the beginning, where you think you might not be willing. You start with where you're willing. And by that time, after the first 8 steps, there were some, maybe half of them, that I was willing to clean up. I knew I had caused trouble, and I knew that the trouble I had caused was a load that I was carrying around. But found out that gradually, over the course of making amends, you can begin to draw a little vertical sign and turn that minus sign into a plus sign. And so gradually, and there was a couple that I had not, I remember coming back from one amends, I hadn't expected to see the guy that day. And I got back home that night to pull his card out of my list because I'd made amends to him. And I looked at the card and it still had the minus on it. But he was there and I didn't even question whether I was willing or not. It was just time to do it. I could not have thought back and said, oh, I'm not willing to do this. It's an intuitive process, you know, and I did it. I just sat with him. So they said, once you get these, anyway, that did I answer your?
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? The format they gave me was this: contact the person and tell them you'd like to see him, and make an appointment in a neutral place. If you can avoid going to their home or their office, or avoid having them to come to your home or office, and you can do it in a neutral place, it's probably better. Making an amends doesn't take long. Telling the truth doesn't take long. We think, oh, we're going to have this a 2-hour deal. No, it's a 2-minute deal or a 5-minute deal. That's what it is. And so you don't want to do it, they told me, around a meal. Don't go to a coffee shop, but don't make a meal of it. It's coffee, and it's a short conversation, unless there's such a healing that it develops into a long conversation. Then you can have some options with what you do with that other time. But it's like, and you can, of course, call a person and say you're going to fit him in between 3 and 3:10 at Joe's Diner. That's not going to work either. You call them up and you say, you know, if they're in AA, you say, I'm in step 9 and I need to make amends to you and I'd like to do it in person. They were big on doing it in person. Can I make amends by phone? Did you do the harm by phone? Well, you know. No. And they said, meet him in person. This is direct amends. I didn't hear much about living amends. I heard about direct amends. Because we do the harm directly. We're right in the middle of their lives, usually, when we're doing our harm. And so we have to sit with them. And the ego says, good time for you to circle back to step 1 and do the first 8 steps again, you know. And you have to set that aside. Ask for the, take me to my next amends and give me the power to make it. So you make the appointment, they said to me. And you, if they're not in AA, you say, you know, I've been going back through my life and I've had some concerns about the way I've treated people. And you're one of the people that I feel bad about how I treated you. And I'm wondering if we can't sit down just briefly. I'd like to clean that up with you. And they said, after the person agrees, most of them will. Sometimes they'll say, you know, I really don't want to see you. I'll be writing you a letter for now, and I hope someday we can meet. But we don't push it, you know, in the sense of, if they don't want to see us, that's pretty much the end of the story. You can't barge into their lives. All you can do is get permission to send them a letter. If that's the way it has to be done. And if they don't want to send you to send them a letter, you have to say, can you give me about 3 more minutes on the phone? Well, okay, what is it? And now you really have to be squeaky clean. Now you really have to tell them enough that they know that you mean business And this inevitably requires that you say in detail the harm that was done, the detail that we don't want to deal with. Not detail that is going to hurt them, not detail that is going to make them aware of something that we did that they did not know about, but the detail of, you remember that night that I hit you? I have never forgotten that and how bad I felt about that. Do you remember that night I pushed our little boy? Do you remember that night? I just want you to know, and I don't blame you for not wanting to see me or even get a letter, but I am so very sorry for that. I just want you to know that if I can do anything to set that right, I will do that. And I'd like to talk to the little boy too someday, if that's possible. It's, you know, but if that's all you can do on the phone, and you can do much more in person if they're willing to see you. But we want to set this right in any way we can, and in the most kindly way we can, and in the way that really lets them know that we would heal it up if we can. Because our own healing and our own usefulness to the world and to God really ride on this, and it's critically important. And so the next step in this whole business, and we'll take a little break here in a minute, is that after we contact them and after we make an appointment to see them and we meet with them and we thank them for meeting with us, and then we say, I'm here because I harmed you, and this is the harm that I see that I did, and whatever it is, specific harm, and they will listen usually. And then we have to ask, do you need to tell me how any of this made you feel? And sometimes they have a lot to say about that. And then we have to listen without interrupting, because they need to be heard so much. They need to be heard. And then we say, is there any harm that hasn't been discussed yet that you can think of that I haven't brought up? And then we listen. And they will tell us. And the last question, the question with the marching orders attached to it, is this: what can I do to make this right? What can I do? What would you have me do to make this right? And sometimes they will tell you, and sometimes if they're parents, they say, well, I just want you to be happy. But we have to honor that. Because these are our marching orders. There is something sacred about what they say that they want us to do. And we must at long last be willing to do it. Don, that I've been talking about, that has been so useful and helpful to me, his mother said, I just want you to be happy. And he got it. And now he goes and visits her every week, and he's happy. He lets her see that he's happy. He doesn't go moping around there. He's happy. Such is the great burden of AA. He has to be happy in order to... It's that. And so then we set out to do them, and I'll talk next hour on my personal experience with those men. Yes, we have a question here before the break. Okay, I'll give you that. Well, we'll go over them after the break. I'll repeat those five. Is that fine with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, let's do that. So that everybody has that sequence of five things. In fact, I'll write it on the board. Okay, let's take a break. Come back at 9:35. Okay. So the instructions, I wrote them up here, but make an appointment if possible. You can't make an appointment with everybody. There are people that you don't know where they are, or they're dead, or they won't see you. But you make an appointment. You thank them for meeting with you when you sit down. I appreciate this time with you. You admit the harm. You ask them for their idea of other harm. And you ask them if they need to say how any of that made them feel. And then you ask them what I can do to set this right. And there is no way to describe what the energy is going on there, because it is a time that you've asked for power. It's a time that you have gone through, if you've noticed in step 8 in the big book, it says setting aside what they have done. And in step 8 in the 12 and 12, it talks at length about forgiveness, and we must have let it go. Forgiveness is a tricky thing, and I think there was a minister in New York in the 30s that was a friend of Bill's, and this minister wrote some books. One of the ones he wrote, his name is Fox, Emmett Fox, and he wrote a book called Sermon on the Mount. And in Sermon on the Mount, Dr. Fox, as part of the book, dissects the Lord's Prayer. And there is a chapter in there on forgive us our debts as we have forgiven our debtors, or trespasses, whatever he uses. And it is a very, very touching account of why it's so important for us to forgive. And he makes the point that there's hardly any of us that hasn't had taken a little trifling hit and can't rise above it. But there's also hardly any of us that haven't been hurt so bad that we think we'll never let it go. Can't let it go. Because if I let this go, I'm more vulnerable than ever to getting whacked again. And it's usually somebody that's been close to us. It might be a stranger, a rape, or something like that. But there's hardly anybody that hasn't been hurt in that way, and hurt badly in that way. And we come to AA in that wounded state. And although we know that God enters through the wound, we still don't want to heal it up in a way. We want to hang on to our anger against that person. I want to hang on to my anger against my dad. I want to hang on to my anger against my grandma and my mom. I want to hang on to it because it just feels like it's my way of getting even in some way. It just feels like it's my way of having a ready excuse for why I don't live my life out 100%. You know, that was such a piece for me as I discovered through this thing. I took some whacks when I was a kid, and I deserved a lot that I got, but not all of them. And I felt that I had been permanently harmed. I didn't even admit that to myself because I didn't think it was the right image to have, to walk around with sort of a mopiness to me. But I really believed at core that I had been permanently harmed by that. And one day in this process, I realized, they harmed me, but it wasn't permanent. I felt like I'd been crimped, like I could live my life 70% instead of 100%. And I had a little 40% life to live, instead of living the life I had been given. And so I kind of didn't really reach. I didn't really get a full plate. I didn't want all your love because I wasn't going to get, and because, of, you know, and all of that stuff. I sponsored a guy. It was so funny. He was raised in an orphanage. Talk about old ideas. It was funny. He told me that at the table when they were eating, he would say, if you said, please pass the potatoes, the answer came back, eat something you can reach. Which is a cold shot, man, but you don't reach, you know, and you just kind of eat your little stuff right around there because you want to be able to stay indoors at night. Yeah. And it was kind of like that. Funny what a brain will do. Yes, ma'am.
I hear a lot of people, you know, say, well, I have to make amends to myself.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen you about that, but I would like to hear what you have to say about that.
About me making amends to me?
Yeah.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
They told me not to put that name on the list.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen you about it, but I was just curious because I heard an awful lot of people say it, like,
well, you know, it is a, I don't know what it is. I think that if I did that, I would, it's like when, how I've lived my whole life. When I get mine, I'll then have enough to share with you. And if my first task is to make amends to me, I'll make amends to you. I think I'll be done with mine to me in next year, maybe, something like that, you know. Maybe I got you scheduled for 2007. Until then, I'll be concentrating on myself, and thank you very much. Yeah, I don't see any reason for that. Have I harmed myself? Yeah. Do I need to let myself off the hook for that? Sure. Sure, which is why we're talking about forgiveness now. But I have heard people that I respect say, make amends to yourself first. That is not my experience, and I never got to a point. Because by the time we get done with this process, if we have done it thoroughly, there isn't any sense of impoverishment that I have. There's no sense of diminution. And I realize that the whole process is about somebody that I am no longer. I'm just not that person anymore, and perhaps never was. I'm like a guy that added on all of these old ideas and all of this conduct, like a guy put on a pair of shoulder pads in football. And then after the practice is over, I forget to take them off. I think I still need them. But nothing ever fits real well after that, you know. It just doesn't fit. It's inconsistent with reality. So I agree with you. I don't think there's... And there's nothing in this book about that. I looked. I was hoping that I'd find that so I could make amends to myself because I've been hurt so much. I went, damn, I can't find it.
I've got a question about that first portion there of working that step is if someone's across country and I really don't have plans to go there, do I need to go ahead and make those arrangements and go make that happen, or do I need to... You know, I don't know. How would you approach handling that?
Well, it depends on how thorough you want to be. I did. I just got, Gary and I were talking this morning. I picked up my messages last night, and a guy that we sit with is on, and he doesn't have any money, but he saved up some money. And he went back to the East Coast where he had his early sobriety and where he grew up. And he sat with a lot of people in the last 3 weeks. And he drove back, and he was driving back over the Mississippi when he called me. And he's got one more left in that area and one in Arizona. And then he'll be home. And he sounded good. He sounded good. Yeah. Heals you up. You know, it's sort of like somebody said to me, they said, Clint, you got the rest of your life to become the person you really want to be or to defend who you are. And that's a choice every day. Yeah. So we want to be, and it says in the book, if we are thorough and painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. And it seemed like that. And I'll get into the specifics of my own little trip down this way. And it seems like if you're new, relatively new, and you're at step one or at step two, you haven't really picked up the power to see, man, my life has stopped being any of my business. And what do I care? If I can somehow manage the means to go back there, if I can set aside a little bit, God has been so good to me, and I'm making money that I never made before, and I paid back money here. How much does it really take to get on a plane and go back? And if you want to delay it, you just book flights on United, and then you never have to go back. I shouldn't get into that. That's an outside issue, I think, isn't it? It only comes up because Gary and I are booked back on United today, and we may be here with you for a couple of weeks. We don't know. I got to start over now. You made me forget my place. My name is Clint, and I... No, I don't know. Forgiveness is a very important thing. Forgiveness is letting that other person off the hook. Because until I can do that, I'm tied to that person by a cord of what Fox calls a cord of steel. I'm tied to them because I'm never quite, I hang on to them in a hateful or angry way. And if they come into my sight, then I get angry again if they come into my sight. And the ones, the trifling hurts, the ones that we want to rise above, the one I don't want to, I don't even want to let her know she hurt my feelings with that. Because she'll do it again if she knows. You know how they are. You know how they are. I don't make any. They say that men are up front with their power and hide their wounds, and women are up front with the hurts and hide their power. And it's probably true. That's why the men never see the power that women have. We miss it. We mistake the wound for no power. They got power. Thank God. Thank God, because you can. Just, that's such a sweet, sweet thing. But we don't get that sometimes. Isn't there a tribe that has a council, and the council historically is a council of elders that are male, and they can't. They can make all the decisions in the world that they want, but in order to implement those decisions, they have to go to a council of elder women. Huh? Iroquois Nation. And until the women sign off on it, and that just acknowledges that remarkable wisdom and power that is in the tribe that would otherwise go unacknowledged and unused. And they'll send it back and say, you know what, don't go there. No, the men in the tribe have decided. Yeah, don't go there. Yeah, there's a great, great, deep wisdom to that. And we are in a society where the women have enormous wisdom and power. And for us not to get that is a huge mistake. Huge mistake. And they, I was back in Omaha last weekend with a man and his wife. We have here with Pat and Joe, and through working together, they get a lot done. A lot done, and her wisdom is an important piece of it. In any case, we hang on to these old hurts, and we want to rise above the trifling ones instead of knowing I have to forgive her for that too. A couple of months ago, my wife, I was embellishing a story in front of other people, and my wife had the bad manners to correct me. To actually tell the truth about the story that I was embellishing. And I can't tell you why. I think it was because of who the other two people were. But I really got my feelings hurt over it. And I hate to admit that my feelings are hurt. And I wanted to have a little chit-chat with her about that. But you feel so dumb, you know. After a while, you can't get by with saying, you know, that crap about telling the truth in front of other people isn't going to work for me. A little hard to say. And so you pick a fight in some other way. You know, that's all you got left to do is be unfair. Better no retaliation at all, isn't it? No, and so the first task was to forgive it, to let her off the hook, to acknowledge that whatever she had to say, she wanted to say her truth about it. And it was not designed to humiliate me. It was not designed to embarrass me. It was not designed to have everybody think she's smarter or more truthful than I am. It was simply she remembered it in another way. And she had that to say about it. Nobody but me gave it a second thought, you know. I'm the one that lost sleep that night. Nobody else. These other people went home and they had a good time being with us. And she, I noticed, went sound asleep real quick. And the task is to forgive it. The task is to forgive it. Are you going to let it go or not? And it's not that hard, provided that we're willing to forgive it. We're willing to forgive it. And if it's about ourselves, we have to be the same thing. Emmett Fox, in this chapter, in a book called Sermon on the Mount, says, and I won't go through all of this, but he says, the technique of forgiveness is simple enough and not very difficult to manage when you understand how. The only thing that is essential is willingness to forgive. Providing you desire to forgive the offender, the greater part of the work is already done. People have been under the impression that to forgive someone means you have to like them. Not true. If you don't like them, are not required to. The task, of course, is to love them in the sense that we wish them well. But we don't like everybody that we see, and we don't like everybody that we feel has offended us. And the task is not, and to avoid forgiveness, because now I got to start to like him, isn't the case at all. It's to just simply let him off the hook. He says the method is this: get by yourself and become quiet. Repeat, you can look at this, I'll leave it out, but just kind of be with me as I read this. Repeat any prayer or treatment that appeals to you, or read a chapter of the Bible. And then quietly say, I freely, fully and freely forgive Linda. And I loose her and I let her go. I completely forgive the whole business in question. As far as I am concerned, it's finished forever. I cast the burden of resentment upon God within me. That person is free. I am free too. I wish her well in any phase of her life, or him well. That incident is finished. God has set us both free. Thank God. And then get up and go about your business. On no account repeat this act of forgiveness. You've done it once and for all. And if you did it again, it would be to say, well, I didn't do it right the first time. When the memory of the offender or the offense comes to your mind, bless that person. God love them. And dismiss the thought. Do this however many times the thought may come back. After a few days, it will return less and less often until you forget it altogether. And perhaps after an interval, shorter or longer, the old trouble may come back to memory once more, but you will find that now all bitterness and resentment has disappeared. And you're both free, with the perfect freedom of the children of God. Your forgiveness is complete. The result of the policy is that very soon you will find yourself cleared of resentment. There is what we're caught up with in this, since the prayer is, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, it really conditions my forgiveness on my willingness to forgive who I think has harmed me. And sometimes that's me. Sometimes that's me. God, I was so stupid when I slept through that entrance exam for Yale University. I can't let myself off the hook for that. I blamed everybody I knew for that. But harboring a deep resentment that I had been that dumb, that I hadn't seen how important it was, that I just had this notion that my life would be different because I knew I'd just smoke that test and all that kind of stuff. So I had to let myself off the hook. And there's nothing wrong with that. And we do it a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, but we have to first be willing to do it, because if I am using that as an excuse for not living 100% life, then I better let myself off the hook for it. And that's how I'll use it. That's the only reason I cling to it. I get something out of it, some excuse for my own personal limitation out of not letting myself off the hook. Oh, if I'd have done that, I would have gone to Yale. I would have done that. Boy, I'd have this now and all that. Now look at me. I just have this little trashy 25% life. Forgiveness is a big thing. And there is not one of us in the room that doesn't want to be forgiven. I want to be forgiven for all of it. I want the forgiveness of God. I want my own forgiveness. And sometimes we hold a grudge against a race, against a political party, against another group in AA, against a person that doesn't agree with us, and we have to forgive it. I don't want to get into any idea of being mad at somebody that thinks they have to make amends to themselves first. Let it go. Let it go. That's none of my business. I agree I wouldn't want to be observing that little kind of a notion, but that's... And if it irks me and I think they're somehow... See, what I'll do is make some self-righteous... I usually hang on to it in a self-righteous way. Why, they're killing people over there in that group doing that crap. Really? Which one has died? Have you got a list of those that are dead now because of that? Oh, they're killing people. We love that, Nellie. We're killing people over there. But then they say that about the Pacific group too, so we have a public burial every month just to make them happy. We publish a list, here are the people that have died because of what we're doing in this group. It makes them happy. They read it at general service office. Okay, so the forgiveness is an important thing. Yes, sir.
Am I wrong in my thinking? Yes. That,
next question.
You ask someone forgiveness, and they turn to you and go, "Working your seven stuff, are we?" And we're thinking they're a bitch for doing that. Is that wrong?
So you ask somebody to forgive you.
Yeah.
And she turned to you and said, "Working our seventh."
Working your seventh step, aren't we?
Uh huh. The only possible response is you haven't read the seventh step recently, have you? Well, that, you know, that really, it's one thing to apologize to somebody. It's another thing to ask them to forgive you. For whatever it was, it requires something of them that they are clearly not prepared to do, which invites more rancor.
Yeah.
Really, we don't have that right to intrude again. We've intruded once; they didn't like it. Then we go back and forgive them. But really, we have a guy in our group that just. Was driving everybody normal because he was saying he'd pick a fight with a woman in a meeting and then he'd call her at midnight to apologize and want to talk to her for an hour, you know, and it got pretty transparent after a while that he was just being intrusive and didn't really want to clean it up at all. It was just his excuse to call him under the guise of being a good AA.
Yeah.
So we can't go there with that. If you want to apologize, if we have something to say to clean it up with somebody in a step 10 thing, when we're wrong, promptly admit it, we do that, but we do it promptly. And, you know what? I shouldn't have said that to you, and I'm sorry. I shouldn't have, whatever, I shouldn't have grabbed your seat. I knew it was yours, and I'm sorry. I'm going to move on.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Okay. All right. Good. Something we get in and get out of, but to require some specific response on their part is usually to prolong the tension, and it's not doesn't really take us where we want to go.
See, man, there's two parts of this: those that we ask forgiveness of that we wrong, correct? That's up. Am I getting this right? The other part is forgiving them.
Well, yeah, first of all, the act of forgiveness is really a step 8 act. That's the principle of step 8 forgiveness. And it's a very personal thing. I, for example, in that story I told you about Linda telling that, I did not go to her and forgive her for that at all. First of all, I behaved myself while we were with those people. Secondly, when we got home, I was cheerful and didn't pout about it because I've been down this road before. And I know that for me to withhold communication or withhold approval or withhold good wishes, withhold comfort because of something like that isn't how I want to live. And I know that the problem is never out there. I know it's my problem and that the answer is in here too. And so I couldn't get to sleep. And I'm chewing on this and chewing on it and trying somehow the best I can to make her wrong. And then finally I came to forgiveness on it and I let it go. But she never did know. She doesn't know to this day. And I know none of you will report this terrible thing. No, she won't. Don't let her see these tapes, God. It's not that. It isn't about going to them and forgiving them. It's about forgiving them in your heart and letting them off the hook at step 8. And it is not at step 9 about asking them to forgive you. That's not here. It is, what can I do to set this right? Whether they're going to forgive us is another matter that is going to be up to them.
So asking forgiveness is more than externalization, and forgiving is more internalization.
Yeah, but asking forgiveness is not part of this step. It isn't that. All right. Okay. Who else? Yes, sir.
And this is something we've been kind of kicking around, so I'm just kind of thinking about it. How does this relate to what you're saying, or how? What is your understanding of this, where in the 12 and 12 and 8, it says, step 8, about the emotional. In many instances, we shall find that though the harm done others has not been great, the emotional harm we have done ourselves has very deep, sometimes quite forgotten. The damaging emotional conflict persists below the level of consciousness. At that time, these occurrences, they may have given our emotions a violent twist, and you spoke about that early on yesterday, I think, with writing, which has discolored our personalities and altered our lives for the worse. So, in step 8, does that apply to me, or just certain people that are pretty bad off in the program? Or what, you know, how do I find those violent emotions? You know, I relate them to, you know, I act a certain way or do a certain thing in a certain situation, not knowing anymore, because that's just my defense.
Yeah. And it is something that comes up in step 6, in step 5, really. You'll see, God, I've been swinging at guys all my life for that insult my dad gave me. And it's gotten me in a lot of trouble, and it's caused me to do a lot of harm. And so my reaction, if a guy looks at me cross-eyed, is to swing. Now, do I really want to? And because I think if a guy has a certain look on his face, he is going to harm me, and I'm going to tag him first. Because when my dad had that look on his face, he smacked me, and at 4 years of age, and I thought my life was over, because I thought my dad liked me up until that time. So the old idea is sort of like male authority figures attack you suddenly and without any reason, and then you sense it in a bar or from a cop or from a guy that's just, you know, and boom, you're on the way out the door. And we don't want to be at the effect of that, especially here where guys come in and they're raw and they're looking, and you know. And if we can't treat them in a loving way, we have to at least stay away from them until, so we don't do them any harm. And the old idea comes up at step 4 and 5, and then at step 6 we sort of identify it, and then at steps and ask, am I willing to let that go? Am I willing to see that that's just my notion of what that look means, and let it go? So I don't have to misinterpret that look every time I see it. Because some guys are just wounded ducks and they got that look. But it doesn't mean they're even, you know. And if the answer to that is yes, and if we got a God that's willing enough to, big enough to take it away, we ask him to do that. And so then we come into step 8 and we say, you know, that old idea caused some harm. Caused some harm. I gave my brother a pretty good whooping one day for that. And he didn't have it coming. And I got to go clean that up. That's how it kind of flows through there. But sometimes quite forgotten insult of long ago that's changed our personality for the worse is in step 8 in the 12 and 12, but it's really kind of falls along more in 4, 5, 6, and 7 in the big book. Those two books were written 12 years apart. One is an inspired book. I mean, Wilson was only 4 years old when he wrote the big book. And I don't think he wrote it. I think he just held the pen, you know. There's just too much inspired stuff in there for him to have consciously worked that through in the way that he did. And then he's 12 years sober, and he's gone through his own depressions, and he's kind of working out a way that he comes back to the steps and sees if he can't analyze them in a more intellectual way, in a way that we might understand. But in the big book, it's not an intellectual process so much. And when we read that big book, we don't really hang on to its language. It's almost impossible to trap that language and then burp it up in a meeting. You don't hear it much unless somebody's gone to a lot of trouble to memorize it, because it's not intellectual. It just triggers us at a completely different level. And that's what its power is, because we're reacting from a completely different level. And the healing needs to take place there too. And our mind does shift when we begin to see how this stuff works out. But it's not, but the 12 and so I know the 12 and 12 to some extent, but I have the intimate experience with the big book more.
You think that the talks in the big book and I would further step into the big book, the fundamental twist of the alcoholic, does that arise out of some of the same things that Miguel read there about our sometimes subconscious twisted emotional takes on certain events in life and how we react to those things? We have a peculiar mental twist towards things that's almost an indescribable frame of mind. When I know in step two, when I was after reviewing my drunk log and seeing how things were when I was sober, the problem wasn't when I was drunk, the problem was when I was sober.
Yeah.
Incapable I was of living comfortably within my own skin sober, which always led to the next drinking bout and stuff. And for some reason I could tie those two together, that my peculiar mental twist is somehow related to those subconscious malformations or malfunctions that I somehow acquired through growing up through wherever.
I think that's true. Wilson talks about a peculiar mental twist in terms of that takes us to drinking. But as you say, that doesn't exactly go back to sleep when we're not drinking. The fact that we feel it even more. The peculiar mental twist is what places us beyond human aid. The peculiar mental twist says, I can't get my power except from an outside source, and when I find booze, that's it, and the peculiar mental twist takes me back to booze and booze and booze and booze. I think it's really, as you suggest, the basis of chronic untreated alcoholism. After years of sobriety, my peculiar mental twist means that I am not going to live comfortably in this world. Something else is the matter with me, and it's up here in this mind with all of these old ideas. And it's so complex, it defies any kind of teasing out those old ideas in a psychiatrist's office. It really, they despair of ever helping us. They really just, first of all, we can't tell them the truth, and even if we could, we don't want to, you know. And if they're one of these, are these mm-hmm guys, they put you on the mm-hmm machine, and it never goes anywhere. We just start circling the drain. It isn't until we tap into the spiritual principles that we get some loosening up of that tight ball enough that we can begin to pluck out these old ideas. And taken together, I think those old ideas create that peculiar mental twist. And twist is an interesting word, isn't it? I mean, I don't like to think I have a twisted mind, but it doesn't leave me with much else to conclude. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask just real quick. From what I understand what you said is, I don't want to have to keep making amends for the same thing over and over.
Right.
And if I have made amends, if I keep hurting different people the same way over and over and over again, then there's something I need to go back into four or five and see what my character.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. have to visit a lot of hospitals that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure, you can go from the alcoholism ward and the 12-step call right over to the orthopedic ward and see the guy there in the cast. And sure, it's exactly what we're doing. You know, as I said, I'm like 23 years sober when the dawn comes. I'd been married twice in drinking, twice in sobriety. I'd had several other long-term 3 and 4 year relationships. And it's like, after a while, even a guy as defended as I am gets sort of a clue that I'm the common denominator in all of this, and I don't know how I cause the trouble. I don't even know how I bring him into my life. I don't know how I run him off. I don't have the bulk on me that I pop guys in the head. That has not worked out real well for me when I've tried it. I usually go home with my nose over here under my... But we all have our ways of hurting people. All have our ways of getting even with the old hurts. The old hurts. And you're very right to be concerned about, look, I don't feel so hot about how that went. And I don't want to have to be living a life where I'm making amends and where I'm always saying, I shouldn't have done that. So there's a core that needs to change. It goes like this. I got a lemon tree in my backyard. And I walk out into the back and I notice that the leaves are turning brown and the fruit is turning a little bit brown. And so I go get a step ladder and a pail of water and I put that ladder out there and I climb up and I take a little spoon and I start putting water on that brown lemon. And you'd say, that may not be where you want to go with that, because then there's going to be another brown lemon over here, and then you look back and notice that lemon is still brown even though you watered it, and that's not quite. And so the steps really allow us to notice that there is a root problem, and we can water that, and then the whole thing is fine, and the fruit we bear is sweet, and that's what you want, and that's what you're going to get, sweet fruit. That was a nice analogy I gave. I'm so pleased about it. I never heard myself say that before. Well, well, well.
My question is along the same lines. I've been several of the stories and several men, and there's one particular person that shows up every single story. And I am not liberated from this cosmic binding, the resentment.
Right.
I'm not done with it.
No. Boy, I'm glad you asked that question, because there is an answer, and the answer is forgiveness. And we don't know how to do that. And I don't want to get pilloried for going outside conference-approved literature, but I've done two things in my life that don't have anything to do with AA that were enormously helpful to me. One of them was go to this goofy Catholic engaged encounter with my wife before we were married, because I came out of there. It was so powerful that one couple of the 50 that were there on Saturday at noon came up to the people that were running it and said, you know what, we really thank you so much for this, because we just discovered we're not going to marry. We don't belong together. God, what a valuable thing that would be. It was that powerful. And for me, I came to know I want to marry Linda, and I want to be with her. And what really added in for me was commitment. These people get it about commitment. They get it, and I got it. And it was quite an amazing thing. It was just God's grace working through those people. And the second thing was this book, Emmett Fox's book, Sermon on the Mount. And you're a bright guy, and you pick up a copy of that book. It's at any number of bookstores, or they'll order it for you. And you turn to that last part. The Lord's Prayer has seven clauses in it. And the middle clause and the pivotal clause, forgive us our debts or our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Because my forgiveness is not available to me until I forgive them. And he tells you exactly how to do it and the high price we pay, which you're talking about, for not doing it. Read that thing. A guy gave me that book when I was in this process. I read it on a plane coming back from someplace. I just flipped it open to that thing. I wasn't even thinking about anything. And I realized of all the hard work I had done and all the amends I had made, there were still people that I had not ever let off the hook. I hadn't forgiven them because the way wasn't exactly lighted in the process to that. And by the time that plane landed, I had a list of 10 or 11 names of people that I had never forgiven, and I had performed an act of forgiveness as to each one of them, and the guy that got off that plane was different than the guy that got on it. It's powerful stuff. And so God was loving me through that Emmett Fox thing that day. And I'm a big book nut, and I believe in doing what it says here. And I'm like you. I can make amends, but if I haven't forgiven it, their part in it, it still rankles. It does, and I have a tendency to go back and they say, yeah, we talked about that last year. Yeah, that's right, but I wanted to make sure I'd made amends, you know. And it's like everybody's kind of, okay, fine, see you again next year. Yeah. All because we haven't forgiven them, yeah. Yeah.
And therefore, it's not quite as viable as a tool in which you can step through it.
Well, I expressed my familiarity with the big book and not so much familiarity with the 12 and 12. And it's, you know what it is? It gets to be, to some extent, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. In a way, you know, I don't really take a position on it. When I was a kid and I got baptized in the Yellowstone River, when I was like 13 in early March, we did complete immersion, and we were very proud that we did complete immersion. And because the other church was doing something else. All I know about complete immersion in the Yellowstone River in early March when you're 13 years old is you do not find God. In fact, for about 3 days you don't find very much of anything, as it turns out. You go, that'll scare little Clinty, I'll tell you. Woo! And it's that way, you know. Technique and all of that. We're not really after the perfect technique. We want to develop an attitude, and there is no attitude developing technique. We just want to go home. We just want to go home. And if you find your way home through the 12 and 12, oh, I'm glad for you. That was not my path. But it's just a path. It's not the destination. Yes, sir.
It's pretty good. You want forgiveness and that freedom from bondage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that story's in the back?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another place to look. Freedom from Bondage is one of the personal stories in the back, and it's thanks. It does have a nice exposition on forgiveness. Now I can't remember where we are back there. Are we okay, you and Don? Are we?
45 minutes.
Oh, we're at 45. Okay. You guys are asking some great questions here. Yes, sir. Did you have your hand up? No. All right. Okay. Yes. Yes. Your name is
Gary.
Gary, I remember you. From Monday night and Thursday night.
We've gone through the process, pulled out some old ideas, a new one pops up that I didn't know about.
Okay.
What action do I take about? How do I act? Just please remove this one because I don't want to repeat it.
Okay, yeah. It's like owning it. Is this really my old idea? And you were talking about it last night, I think, in a little bit when you shared. the idea of embarrassing people. Or what, I can't remember exactly how, the words you used. And it's about one, is that really my old idea? And where did it come from? If I can trace it back, I'll really notice that it's mine. And number two, am I willing to let it go? It's a 6 and 7 process. Number, and then, do I have a big enough God that'll take it away? Well, we know that you do. You got a big guy. What would replace it? What would really please you? And then you might have to actually, you know, sit down with somebody else and say, because when most of this is beyond our belief system, which means that what Gary wants for me is sometimes more than I could ever imagine I would want, because he loves me, that I could have. And what I want for him is more than his mind could get, because what I want for him is not outside of my belief system for him, but it may be outside of his belief system for him. Because we kind of keep ourselves a little constricted. We don't, yeah. Oh, none for me, thanks. Oh, you go ahead, I'll be all right. You young people have your own way of doing things. I'm having a big time today.